Hi, everyone.
It's the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for August 30th, Tuesday, 2022. That's Ian Ferguson and his true classic tea. Nice and comfy. I'm Pat Contry. We got a show today, don't we, Ian?
We do.
Talking about where we are at with modern gaming with the PS5 price increase and Phil Spencer saying there'll be less exclusive games as time goes on. Wow. Warner Brothers regrets doing the Snyder Cut. Gamescom happened, Sakurai started a YouTube channel, and other stuff's been happening. I bloviated, waxed nostalgic about Knight Rider before we start recording this on the exclusive patreon.com/CU podcast.
Bonus bits.
Ian wanted to knock me out because I was talking about how much I wanted to go back and live in 1983 with a leather jacket and my big hair when it was in fashion.
Little nostalgia.
We decided this is season four Michael Knight here. His poof came down as the seasons went on. It wasn't in style anymore in 85, 86 when the show ended in its fourth year.
So, how was your weekend?
It was okay.
Yeah.
I tried to relax yesterday. I always consider Monday part of the weekend. This is like a Monday to me. Terms of work, the podcast is the first like get up and go day where you have to do a lot of work, but no, it's okay. I got Indian food with a friend. Frank had a nice little get together with three of the guys, a guys' night, like his two of his older friends and me, and we had trouts with heads on them. I never had a fish, like,
oh, really?
a full fish before.
It's good. It's tasty.
Oh yeah, and it was always obviously gutted. Only had the spine in it and the head. The head bothers me still. I like get the head off away and put it on a plate. It was easier to eat than I thought. I pulled the spinal cord out a la Sub-Zero, and most of it came out. There's still little pieces.
You lose a little something.
You got to, in there. Sometimes. You know, it's like you got to get that out. But it's a lot of fish and a trout. About, you know, it's like 18-inch trout. You know,
yeah, trout's good.
It's probably like a good pound and a half of meat on that. Almost, it was a heavy fish. Frank made his rice pilaf. He loves the pilaf. The wild rice pilaf is good.
Oh, yeah, it's good.
Intermittent fasting. And then also his friend Richard did grilled asparagus on the grill.
Oh,
grilled asparagus,
shit.
Yeah, of course it's on the grill. But and then
bacon wrapped asparagus is really good too.
Oh, and then for dessert I bought one of those, like, you go to the store, you buy like the chocolate cake rings, that for some reason the sauce on it tasted like medicine. It tasted off. I don't know why. It's like, it tastes like rum, but this is not alcoholic. Like, it tastes like a rum cake, but it wasn't. It was weird. And then I got macaroons. Who doesn't like a macaroon? I can eat like 70 of those. Coconut's so good.
They're good.
That was my weekend, was eating.
I was in Tijuana helping Vani with her mom, who has been very sick. And that's about as much detail as I'm going to go into on that. I got back last night. I did not eat well over the weekend. It was a very busy weekend. It was mostly I lived mostly off of protein shakes. Protein shakes and Diet Coke was what got me through the weekend.
Okay.
And I ate like an animal. I ate like half a cantaloupe on Sunday when I was making some fruit salad for her mom. I just like it was like I tasted a little piece, and like all of the lack of nutrition that had been going.
You needed those vitamins.
It kicked in, and I just like, oh, like an animal.
Cantaloupe's good.
So I decided today, I made a bold decision this morning. Now that I am back in town and I need some real food, I am ordering the Mona Lisa's eggplant sub tonight.
It's good eggplant.
It's a fucking
great good eggplant.
Sub. It's a fucking
damn
great
it. Intermittent
sub.
Fasting.
Yeah.
Damn it.
So I'm really looking forward to that tonight, frankly. Oh. I've got nothing else on my plate. I don't return to work until tomorrow at my day job because I've got to go home and get my life in order a little bit. So that's going to be the centerpiece of my day. I'll probably get a cannoli, too.
Okay. Won't be the cannolis we had back east. But
I know. I've had Mona Lisa's cannolis before.
I got into an argument with Frank about that. I said, Frank, I want to order cannolis and have them shipped from New York. He's like, nah, it's getting out. I said, Frank, it's probably been way too long since you had it. I'm telling you, Frank. I said, you should let me order them for you. I order the Struffoli every year.
Just tell them these are the pastries that made me cry.
I shouldn't. And I pay for it,
Frank,
by the way.
Ian cried. They were so good.
I hate when people say not to do things where they don't have to pay for it. Or it's like, let me pay for it and get it. My mom used to do that. My mom's like, why did you buy that? Because I wanted people to enjoy it, Mom.
Yes.
We're not, you don't, my mom still always thought it was living with her like seven siblings that like, yes, they were probably, they're, you know, they couldn't spend money on a lot of stuff. It's like, Mom, let us enjoy stuff while we have life on this planet. Like, let me buy stuff. Like, she's always,
You can't take it with you.
No.
So just fucking,
I can't take this shit with me.
Enjoy it.
I can't take that copy of Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat with me. I want to. Anyway, so what was I saying? I want to just order $100 worth of pastries and have it shipped.
Yeah, you should.
I want to do that.
Speaking of pastries.
Oh, okay.
Oh, what were you going to say?
No, you go first. Pastries are more important.
Oh, I was going to say, speaking of pastries, Kirby's Dream Buffet kind of came out silently.
Well, I want to tell you about my new Mexican experience.
Oh, no, please tell me about that.
Because it's always a big thing where I try a new Mexican place.
Mm-hmm.
There's Sombrero's is really good. Colima's I told you about. Whenever I always juggle around in my head like which ones I like, what they offer.
I never like to say I don't like. I'm not big on Sombrero's. Sorry, not.
Did you have their calamari taco? Did you have their fried calamari taco? It's really fucking good. Not many places have
that. Calamari could change taco. My opinion. Because calamari taco is probably my favorite, like, seafood taco. It's so good.
And most places don't have it, like regular Mexican places. So I tried Tony's Mexican. They're in Hillcrest. And DoorDash recommends it to me, like, randomly, I guess. I never saw it before. So I was like, okay. Tony's Fresh Mexican,
yep,
excuse me.
Yes, I got it.
4 stars, according to a certain online... It's 4 and like a couple of different things.
2.5 on Yelp though, but Yelp sucks.
Well, I was gonna say, I looked at it, I was like, no, I'm gonna give it a go. So why did I like Tony's Fresh Mexican food?
Why did you?
Well, now I'm trying to find the freaking menu. I always try the breakfast burrito. You can't fuck up a breakfast burrito. It's really tough. Like any breakfast you have is gonna be usually pretty good.
The Buenos Dias, yes.
How do I log into this? I gotta log in with my Facebook or my Google. So I got their breakfast burrito. It didn't say on DoorDash what was in it. I had to go to the website. Which one did I get? I got the ultimate.
Ones.
And I'm trying to find the menu. There's actually 2 Tony's Fresh Mexican. Okay, which one is it? There's 2 on DoorDash. There must be 2 within distance here.
Oh, this is the place that has changed names a few times.
Oh, that's usually not a good
sign.
It
used to be Santana's. Then it was Fresh Mexican. It was like Fresh MXN, and now it's Tony's Fresh Mexican. And I can tell because the Buenos Dias burrito has been in all of those.
Okay, well, they offer a 1 pound, literally it says 1 pound California burrito, so you know what you're getting.
Jesus, yeah.
Yeah, for $10, can't go wrong. So I got the Supreme or the Ultimate, what sounds better? They're all the same price, that's why I couldn't decide. I think I got the Supreme. Now I'm trying to make sure which Tony's I actually went to. So, Ian, it was like a fucking the most dense burrito I've ever had. Bacon, ham, chorizo, eggs. I think it had cheese.
Supreme. That's the Supreme.
And it was all ground up. Like, grind it all up. When you bite, it was so like fucking Rick, producer. It's like talking about stars. It's so dense. Every bite has so much in it. I couldn't eat Ian a third of it. Like, because it was a big burrito. We're talking probably so much just meat mashed together, all the types. Which one was it now? Because they had something particular I wanted to bring up with you to get you excited. Because it's something that most Mexican places don't have, because this isn't technically Mexican. It's more like a Central American Mayan thing that I was going to tell you about, and now I can't find it on the fucking menu. They offered acciote chicken.
Yep, I see it.
Never heard of it before I saw it on the menu. Most places in California have shredded chicken, pollo asado.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what they have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a pollo asado is just like a marinade. Or, you know. Acciote chicken is different. It comes from this weird plant that I believe is more Central America. It's a reddish.
Yeah, it's red. It's very red.
It's a reddish sort of, and they grind it up. It's a redded, like red seed, they grind it up. And it bakes differently and tastes closer, not necessarily like tandoori chicken, but closer to that.
Acciote is awesome.
So I never had it before. So I got the nachos with it on.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at that right now. That would be good as fuck.
It was fucking delicious.
Yeah.
It was succulent. It was like, it's like a reddish sort of chicken, and I wish more places around here offered it. It's the first place I ever saw it offered it, and it was delicious.
This actually sounds really good. I just want to bring it up. The golden egg burrito.
Hit me, Ian.
Carne asada, jack cheese, rice, and chipotle sauce, but the eggs are over easy.
So they run inside?
They run inside and like rice in a burrito, there's a time and a place for it, and this is the place for it, because that rice is going to soak up all that yolk.
So let me tell you something.
Good.
So I respect Tony's Fresh Mexican, because they're doing some different things there.
I'll give them another shot.
They're pushing the envelope.
I didn't like them.
All right, well, we'll try that Acciote chicken. Where does it come from again? It's a weird plant, and that's why it's like, I don't think it's traditionally Mexican. It comes from the Orellana shrub. Like, where the hell is that?
So there is Mexican achiote.
Oh, there is? Okay.
Yeah. It's also, I believe it's called annatto.
Annatto.
You've definitely seen that someplace else. Achiote is not the common... achiote, I think, is the proper term for it, but annatto
Okay, I'm reading an article. It's used interchangeably. Yeah. Achiote and annatto are used interchangeably. Gotcha. I never heard it before. I never saw it. It's a rub. It's like a reddish rub. That's all. Yeah, I loved it. Sorry, Ian. Now I'm fucking starving. Hit me with something that has nothing to do with food.
Unfortunately, we're going right into food, which is, which is Kirby's Dream Buffet came out. I was excited for that, just bringing it up real quick. It's a fun game. You play as Kirby. You run. There's a bunch of different courses. It's kind of got like a Fall Guys setup, but it's only four players.
I like it.
All the food is delicious, like looking. You're just running through cakes and popsicles and bacon slides and things like that. It's a little random, you know, you do a course and then a battle royale and then a course and then a battle royale. And no matter how good you do on everything else, that last battle royale is pretty decisive. You can go from fourth to first and from first to fourth. But, I think we maybe guessed the price as like $19.99 or $29.99 at most when we covered it. Uh-huh. It's $15.
$15?
Yeah, I mean, Nintendo releasing a game for $15. I was like, fuck. So it's well worth the $15. It's a fun game.
And it's multiplayer only.
There's single player races, but I mean, you're buying it to go online and play against other people.
$15 first party title. Super Mario 35 would have been the first experiment. They made a $15, so everyone would have bought it for that.
Yeah.
Kept it around.
Yep. Absolutely.
Still pissed about that.
Gamescom happened this past weekend.
It sure did, Ian.
I've got two things that I a lot of this is not
anything
like super
big coming out of there.
Well, there's two things that I think are important. One, Sonic Frontiers got a real like a good official like where this game is almost ready trailer, and I think the game actually looks pretty good. And it just makes me go back to what a boneheaded idea it was to put all that footage out there that IGN got of like people messing around with beta versions. It made the game look awful. You don't want to show a game in that condition. But this definitely makes me feel like the game is going to be pretty decent. And then the other big one for me was the AEW game. Or not AEW. I've never watched
Fight
an episode
Forever? It's called Fight Forever, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Never watched an episode of AEW. I don't think I would dislike it. I haven't. My main reason for being interested in this game is it literally just bites no mercies gameplay. The AKI style wrestling games on the N64.
Based upon button pressing and holding them down for stronger moves.
Just where you got a strike button, a grab button, and then a strong grab when you hold it down. Strong hits. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun. I love wrestling games. I haven't bought one in a long time. If this has a good create a player mode, I could see myself getting really into it.
Yeah, we need competition.
Yeah.
We need more than one wrestling game. But basically, we need a competitor to push each other.
Yeah.
Like back in the old days, this is what happened with the WCW and WF games. They were on the N64. They were pushing each other to do different things and improve. Having only one company do the same shit all the time is not good. You need variety.
Yeah. I also think it's amusing that just like back then, WCW was kind of like the underdog to WWF. Maybe not at the time, but I just think it's interesting that AEW and WCW get this kind of gameplay, whereas WWF has done it.
WCW pulled ahead for a couple of years.
Absolutely.
From like 96 to like 98, they were it. Well, at least 96, 97. The WWF sucked in 96 and 97. Like, there were nothing going on.
98, 99 weren't. Well, 98.
96, I said 96, 97.
Yeah, no, 98, yeah. I'm saying, is where it started.
And 98 is when Austin won WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Like, that's when officially they were like, okay, WWF is back at that point. That's when it was neck and neck for a little bit, then Goldberg won the title summer.
For whatever reason, I thought that was like early 2000s. Yeah, that was 98.
Attitude Era was done by early 2000s.
Yeah, no, I know.
It was done after they tried to bring the NWO and WWE in 2002, and that was a fucking disaster.
My brain ain't working right today.
I can hear you. I always know the wrestling years with the things. It's like doing baseball stats. Dead Island 2 trailer. I forgot, but the first game was so long ago. Zombies on an island. There you go. More zombies. But people will be looking forward to that. Can you play it any way you want on the island? Is that why it's different? Or is it still like mission-based?
It's open. I think it has like it's that kind of borderland structure where
you
go around, you take on missions, you do stuff.
Okay. Kojima has a podcast. Everyone has a podcast.
Does he?
Starting a podcast. I've called Brain Structure. Huh. There you go. Beginning of September 8th, Hideo Kojima will be launching his very own podcast on Spotify called Brain Structure, which will be a deep dive into his brain and shed light on his creative process. Then hopefully he's not going to be interviewing Alex Jones in a couple months. Hopefully. You imagine that Kojima just comes like a conspiracy theorist on his podcast.
Please no.
Return to Monkey Island gets a September release date. Dune game. AEW Fight Forever. You just talked about that. I wonder if that'll be a yearly series every other year, because back in the late 90s, it was every year for those franchises. For both WWE, sometimes there was multiple in 1 year. You got like Nitro, the shitty Nitro, and you got another WWE game in the same year.
Nitro on the consoles. And Thunder were so bad.
Thunder, Nitro is a fucking horrific game.
Thunder is a little bit better, but not by much. I would rather play Thunder than either Attitude or Raw, though.
Some people like the Attitude engine.
I hated it.
I think it got a decent review in the certain N64 guidebook just because of a lot of like extra views. I don't like that engine.
No, I hate it. ECW used that engine too. I mean, it was acclaim. It was like acclaim as it was dying. It's I personally think it's fucking dog toys. It's awful.
Warhammer game. What else we got here? Anything else here?
No, a lot. I told you I had two things that I thought were necessary to bring up.
A Killer Clowns from Outer Space game coming up. Three versus seven multiplayer game. Is that a thing? 3 versus 7?
Yeah, I think it's got a little bit. I think it's got some of the team members, or at least one team member from the developers that did the Friday the 13th game, and it's going to be similar to that.
3 versus 7. That's just an interesting thing. All right. Well, there's some more stuff happening. Good. Yeah, Gamescom is. Were they back last year? Do they have an in person?
Yeah, they did year? Because that's where the Amico was shown.
Well, that's they had an interview about it. I don't think it was playable, but
well, it was. There was a video that showed them playing with that one guy for like 30 minutes.
It was like an infomercial.
I'm just saying that yes, there was a Gamescom because that's where that was.
It was like an infomercial thing.
Actually, one last thing from Gamescom though: Pokemon collaborates with Mini to reveal a new EV with a projector for movies and games. This is from Brandon Saltamacchia, Retro Dodo. Great little, just a cute thing. Mini is bringing out a new electric vehicle called the Ace Man, and to promote it, they kind of fake packaged one up to look like a toy at Gamescom. It's Pikachu themed, electric car, electric Pokemon, and it's a weird little car. It has some strange add-ons, like there's a circular touchscreen on the dashboard that like does light shows on the dashboard.
Prototype model, or is that going to be like anyone you buy?
I don't know, but I think it's going to be for all of them. The promotional video also shows that they have a projector that you can use to project onto the wall to watch movies or play games. Okay. Just a very, very strange car.
Go down to the schoolyard and project it against the school brick wall.
Yeah,
and play some games.
But anyway, I just thought
your fucking $50,000 electric Mini. How much it's going to cost?
More than anything, Minis I just thought always, the packaging was cute.
Minis historically have been overpriced for what you get because they were like the chic car to have like 12, 15 years ago. You know, and they're underpowered, undersized cars.
Italian Job really brought them. Yeah. The Italian Job remake really brought them back into the forefront.
Yeah, they got them over here. But like when I was investing at the time in the mid 2000s, I'm like, they're not that powerful. They're just small cars, and they're overpriced for what you get.
I think they're adorable, but yeah,
they were always a little bit more than other cars in their class back then. It's a car cast. Now I'm doing the car cast. The CU car cast.
Everything but games.
That's cute. We'll see what happens with that Pikachu model car, who ends up getting that in their garage. Sakurai's doing the easiest thing possible after working his ass off for years and years on Smash Brothers. He's starting a YouTube channel.
Well,
it'll be a lot easier than doing the games.
Maybe. But it's a great channel, and I think this is oddly a feel-good sort of story. After 3 years of basically posting screenshots every day of Smash Brothers on his Twitter, he announced that he's going to do a YouTube channel, and I think it's a very interesting idea. He's going to do bite-sized presentations on game development. The guy's obviously a genius game designer, the father of Kirby and, the Smash Brothers series. And these little 2 to 5 minute videos are...
There's already several out?
Yeah.
God.
They focus on not risk technical reward stuff, hit stops. They focus on theory more than anything.
Risk and Reward and Space Invaders. Just simple sort of... Oh, interesting.
But yeah, and I'm sure he's going to get a little bit more detailed as time goes on. But he did say that he's leaving out a lot of technical stuff on purpose because he wants it to appeal to everyone. But it's good stuff. I mean, if you're a game developer, this is, you probably already know a lot of this, but anyone getting into it could learn a lot.
Yes. Yeah. Talking about like the theory of the attack range of the aliens.
Yeah.
You know, how you're more in danger when they're close. You know, you have to have the sweet spot of when to go after it, things like that. No, it's interesting. And I'm glad he's using older games that the people watching may not realize how important these games were in the history of development and what these mechanics sort of gave people.
Interestingly, it's not associated with Nintendo at all. He's doing it 100% on his own. He got clearance from Nintendo to use certain documents that he's going to use in some of
his
videos.
That's pretty cool.
But yeah, no, he's hired a staff. He's paying them. So he's really getting into it.
There's a Burger Time cameo in the Kirby's Dream Land video. I didn't know that. I didn't watch any of these. I would have watched a couple. I gotta go through these. They're short. Five minutes long?
Yeah, 2 to 5 minutes is what he's aiming for. And it's only about a week old. So yeah, I mean, they're great.
That's very interesting. I wonder when he went to Nintendo and asked that, and they're like, "Oh, you have to keep everything secret." I was like, "No, I'm just going to do this. I earned this. I'm pulling rank.
I made you plenty fucking money."
Yeah, I didn't see sunshine for years.
Right.
It's a funny that he felt the need to post a screenshot every day on his Twitter account. That's just so.
They were funny. They were always like weird, funny
weird things
screenshots
that happened,
too.
That
yeah.
he came across. You know, it's not funny. The Snyder Cut. You can't even call it a cut. The Snyder version of Justice League.
Right.
This yeah, came
not
out.
Not a cut.
No, because they shot new shit, got money to do effects that didn't originally exist and things like that. Warner Bros. Execs reportedly regret releasing the Snyder Cut, citing fan aggression. After a years-long fan campaign, Warner Bros. Released Zack Snyder's Justice League in 2021. Have you ever seen that yet? Did you
no,
watch it?
No, I'm not
okay. I took it for the team and I watched that fucking 4 hour. God,
I appreciate you.
But one report,
absolutely not.
But one report says the studio wishes it hadn't. In a recent report from Variety, you got news in the Hollywood backlot on DC's lengthy struggle to find its own version of Marvel's Kevin Feige, which they're supposedly they're hiring someone. The magazine revealed that studio execs internally regret releasing Zack Snyder's Justice League. According to Variety, they felt that releasing it, referred to as the Snyder Cut by fans, only emboldened fans to oppose Warner Brothers' leadership at every turn.
Yeah, what do you think is going to fucking happen when you reward assholes?
Yes.
This has never in the history of anything ever fucking worked out.
No.
Just dumb.
You don't
shit.
Give in to terrorists.
Yeah.
That's why.
Exactly. You don't negotiate
because
they're
always because it's going to get louder and not accept any decision you make going forward with the weird hopes that you're going to bring back the guy that helped your fucking movies drastically underperform and be critically panned.
Yeah.
Like, that's, remember, you were right, Warner Bros., to toss his ass off. You were dumb to put him in power in the first place and give him keys to the kingdom, but you were right to toss him. You're absolutely right to toss him.
Absolutely.
The movement to release the Snyder Cut came shortly after the theatrical release of the original Justice League. And then we talked about it a week or two ago that it was a lot of bots and a lot of fake sort of like push for that. Twitter is not real life. It can reflect reality, but it is not reality. Jesus Christ. God.
You know what is reality?
What's reality, Ian?
UltimateNintendo.com is
reality. Why is it reality?
Well, you can get real stuff like your books, stickers, pins, goodies, RBI baseball stickers. I brought you back your scissors.
You did. But those like gloss over the sticker things, Ian, because this is the first time it's being offered.
That's right.
You kind of just shoehorn that. The stickers.
This is how I usually go. You fill in the gaps.
We have three podcast stickers, 4 inches. We got the 4-inch one. We got the 3-inch one.
We got limited. We got Danny and we got the logo.
We got the logo sticker for sale. This comes in a 3-pack. We got Danny approved, which was an older t-shirt that people don't remember. And we got the limited, which is also a shirt, which you can get on the site if you're small. So we got those.
If you're small.
And then if you want to go for Frank, we got the Frank and Pat combo. Got the Frank face. You should put that in yours. Get the Frank one, Ian. And you got the Pat. Are these sticking together? These always stick together.
Yeah, they do.
I got to make sure not to send you two at once because they always stick together. It's like a magic trick. They're two Frank. You want a Frank sticker? Did I give you a Frank one?
No, you did not.
There you go. There's a Frank one for next week. And then I got the Pat. At UltimateNintendo.com. We got them going there. Finally. We got them going. We couldn't get the sound little device, but whatever. We couldn't find anything
that looked quality enough.
No, we are only the best for those that see podcast that like us.
You're going to be on Twitch Wednesday?
I will be on Twitch. Twitch.tv/ContraCode. Ian will not be there. Exclamation point Ian. Ian is not in the chat. That's actually a command.
It's great.
It's actually a command that people randomly use. Crypto is BS. We know this. But a new Forbes report says that more than half of all Bitcoin trades are fake. They looked at 157 crypto exchanges in order to come up with that. It's a very dense article. It's so dense. Every piece of... God, Rick McCallum, that fucking idiot. God, the behind the scenes of episode one is so great to watch. Watch those in college on the DVDs. And wow. Obviously, the more volume, I guess, traded, the higher the cost of Bitcoin, the less volume it goes down. That's all it is. It's not fucking magic. I said this 5 years ago when I warned people not to get into it right before it crashed.
It also pumps up visible activity, and makes it look like it's more active than it is.
Yes, it accomplishes two things. So be careful if you get into crypto. I mean, be careful, it's too late. If you got into it 6 months ago, you lost like 70%. Of your value. There was the Web3 is going great, a little post about someone on Reddit who was complaining because he got divorced from his wife, and in the agreement, the wife got all the real assets, got like the house and got like the actual fiat money in the bank account, and then he got crypto because back in the fall it was going up and it was worth more. Now it's worth absolute dog shit compared to what the wife got. And he was asking, well, how do I go back on this deal?
You don't.
You signed a fucking deal with your wife who was smarter about it and realized, no, I actually want the actual money I could spend and get a fucking Coke with. I can spend this dollar or two. I can actually buy things with this because it's actually accepted universally money.
I'm sure if the shoe was on the other foot, the guy would totally be real magnanimous about it and adjust the fucking it.
I don't want to try to guess about how the relationship ended, but it was funny to see that.
Yeah.
The dollar is actually, this is going to come up, I believe, later. The dollar has actually has been strengthened across the world against currencies during this sort of recession, which is interesting.
Yeah, that is.
So now's the time to travel. You want to go to Japan? You want to go to Europe? The euro and the pound and the yen are as weak as they'd almost ever been. Canadian dollar, the Australian dollar, the dollar has been way better against all of them.
Oh, the last time I was in Canada, and this was like 2 years ago, I think, I felt like a fucking baller because my exchange, it was an exchange rate like I had when I was in high school. It used to be like you'd get like a dollar and a half basically for every US dollar. And it was like, I think I got like $1.30 for every dollar that I exchanged. It was a great exchange rate.
It's almost the same thing. It's 75 cents to the dollar.
Okay.
So that's significant.
That is significant, yeah.
When I went years back, I think it was maybe 0.15 or 0.2. less. But that's yeah. What's the actual calculation? I can't do the math in my head when you do the reverse.
No pat math.
$1 is 1.3 Canadian. So you're getting 30% more bang for your buck. That's okay. A lot.
Yeah. So you get $1.30 for every buck that you exchange.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That's crazy. And then if you're going to the pound, like the pound was always like 1.5 more.
Yeah.
Like forever.
Oh yeah.
The pound. And sure. Now the, is it called the sterling? It's always like the sterling.
Pound sterling or something.
Something like that. It's, is it the United Kingdom? God, I got to find it. One pound, one USD, two pounds. 0.86. We're catching up.
Yeah.
Catching up. That's big.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the past year, you look at these charts, it was 0.74 in January. Now it's 0.86. Now's the time to travel if you can do it.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. I'm just saying it is.
Yeah. Aside. Take that dollar.
See you, Travelcast. Super Mario Kart, 30th anniversary. It was the 27th in Japan, and it's the September 1st. In the United States. I always feel like this could have been a topic.
Well, yeah.
Could have been.
Maybe. Mario Kart, the first one, is... while I don't go back to it much, I would still consider it one of my all-time favorite games. I don't know what it was about it, but the first time I played that game on my buddy's Super Nintendo, I couldn't get enough of it. I thought about that game for fucking weeks. I mean, I adored everything about it. And I think for me, what I really liked about it was I was really interested in, like, when I was younger, the early excursions into, I guess you would say, 3D style gameplay or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, unlike racing games that were on the NES or even other racing games that were on the Super Nintendo, where it was very much you're on the road and you got to stay on the road. Mm-hmm. There was exploration and secrets in Mario Kart.
Shortcuts.
That made the game feel like Mario more than just the theming. And I loved that.
You could play around a little bit more.
The idea that there was hidden stuff and that you could go kind of off-road and find new things. It was this early... It's weird to say it with a racing game, but it gave me this early sense of exploration from a viewpoint, you know, that you didn't usually see. And I loved it. I loved it to death. And honestly, as time has gone on, you know, I liked Mario Kart less and less with a lot of these releases until 8 came out. And I love Mario Kart 8. I've probably put, at this point, 250 hours into Mario Kart 8. I think it's fantastic. But yeah, I mean, and for me, when it comes to kart racers...
Was this the first kart racer? If not, it became the prototype for them.
I'm fairly certain it was the first kart racer. To me, there is no other kart racer besides Mario Kart, because they all try to ape Mario Kart so much that it's like, you know, Mom, I want Mario Kart.
Wheels,
we've got Mario Kart at home. Well, I was actually going to bring up Wacky Wheels.
That was a fairly early one, too.
It came out. That was an Apogee game. It came out shortly after Mario Kart on the Super Nintendo. And when I found that game, I fell in love with it because I didn't have a Super Nintendo. And I used to play that one online with my friends.
So Power Drift was, quote unquote, the first kart racing game, but that's more like a traditional racing game, though. They just are in karts.
Yes. Yeah.
So I remember playing that in the arcade.
In terms of the genre, I think Mario Kart is the first.
That's not the same. I don't look at that as a quote unquote kart racer because it's not like a party.
No, it's a great game. I love Power Drift, but I wouldn't consider it a kart racer in terms of the kart racing genre.
Having combat elements. That's why I mean we made it kart elements. Like it's a party. A combat racing
game. Right, where racing is almost secondary to your positioning and your weapons.
Correct. So that obviously sort of started off. Then you had Diddy Kong. You had the Street Fighter, Street Racer one that was on Super Nintendo, the crappy clone one.
I fucking don't like Diddy Kong Racing at all.
You don't? Some people really like it. That's like the other big one that they like.
I like the airplane racing. And the kart racing is okay. I hate the hovercraft racing, the boat racing, can't fucking stand it.
And you got the Lego Racer game that came out on the computers and on N64.
Mickey's Magical Racing or whatever, Disney's Mickey Magical. Speedway, Mickey Speedway.
Speedway USA.
Yeah.
Certain, I think like a good review in a certain NC4 guidebook.
That one is actually pretty fun. I haven't played it in a long time, but I did like it.
But yeah, you start a new genre thanks to the Mode 7 capabilities. Because yeah. Genesis took a while to catch up in that department.
Mode 7 was like the thing that made me wish I had a Super Nintendo, even though I loved my Genesis. The Mode 7 stuff was just so fucking cool to me growing up.
Yeah.
I loved it. That's why I love Pilot Wings. I still love Pilot 3D. Wings. Yeah.
They faked the 3D. They could do it with Mode 7.
Good shit.
Everything's moving around you, basically. Like you're stationary. Everything, they're kind of moving
good
everything
shit.
Around. It's good shit. I mean, F-Zero came out fall of 91, so that was like the first big racing game
right.
that everyone got. I got, you got, probably your friends got. And then, but Mario Kart was like a whole other level of like, now we want to play this two players. Remember, F-Zero was not two players. That's why it did not get 5 stars. Almost did. So that created a whole different element. And then obviously the battle mode was like insane. The battle mode was fucking revolutionary.
The crazy thing to me is I never play battle mode anymore. But for Super Nintendo and for
64,
that's pretty much all I played.
It was revolutionary.
Yeah,
to have that at the time. There was nothing. I can't think of anything else that was similar to that at the time.
I remember sleeping over at my friend's house when Mario Kart 64 came out, and we literally played 8 hours of battle mode. We just
four
kept
players?
Fucking going. Yeah, 4 players.
The party console, the N64 having 4 controller ports was amazing that they did that. Because it was like a marketing. No one else could do that at the time. Like, right out of the gate, here you go. You're good. And you sell more controllers. It's brilliant.
It's one of the nice things I say about the N64. If you have a group of people, I don't like the N64, but like if you're 23 and living in a dorm or like with friends in an apartment, get an N64.
Get Smash, get GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Get some Mario Party.
You'll definitely get use out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll get, in Ian's review, in quotes, you'll get some use out of your N64.
Yeah.
And then it's also the last time we see cute little chubby
Junior.
Donkey Kong Jr. In a game in its original form. Oh, he became the Donkey Kong in Donkey Country. Whatever. I like my cute chubby Donkey Kong with the undershirt on. That's how I like my Donkey Kong Jr. I want him to come back. He might have been before he was in, I think, a Game Boy game as well.
Junior?
I think he shows up in one, but someone will.
I feel like I should know that. I feel bad.
The Mario
for not...
Tennis on Game Boy have different characters? Where did he show up? Donkey Kong Jr. Now I'm going to look this up. Now it's going to bother me.
Now it's bothering me too.
But people say that, oh, he's the one that shows up in in Donkey Kong Country. He's just grown up now. I don't like him. Mario Tennis, yeah. On 64, he's in it. Oh, he's in 64 Mario Tennis?
Junior?
Artwork. I'm looking at the Wikipedia. Is that in the game, or was he canceled?
I don't recall. Well, yeah, maybe. I honestly don't recall that. That's interesting.
Portrayed by Frank Welker on Saturday Supercade. There you go. Welker was also Starscream and Cobra Commander. Rest in peace. The great Frank Welker there. Super Nintendo, Mario Kart. He was in Mario's Tennis. So Mario's Tennis was the Game Boy one, wasn't it? Ian, you're the Game Boy guy, not me.
Tennis is tennis on the Game Boy, on the black and white
Game
Boy.
What the fuck is
Mario Tennis.
Mario's Tennis.
Yeah, that I don't know.
Oh, Virtual Boy. I knew we should have. Sorry, it was on the Virtual Boy Mario Tennis.
Ah, okay.
Wow. Okay. He's actually a playable character on that. There you go. Okay. I want him back, Nintendo. Put him on that cute little undershirt with the little barrel on it or whatever he has. All right. Well, finally, what we got? Resident Evil show canceled.
Do we
fucking care?
No, I don't.
Do we watch that?
I haven't watched it.
Did people like it? No one probably liked it. It's one of the times probably where I don't care about the canceling thing. Obviously, some people probably liked it. I just started watching a show on Netflix my friend told me about called, it's called Friends from College. They only did 2 seasons of it. Last season was in 2019. It looked interesting. About like 40-year-olds that are reconnecting after 20 years, and it's disastrous. Obviously, looked interesting. Good cast.
Have you watched The Bear yet?
The Bear?
Yeah.
What's The Bear about?
I thought I brought it up. It's been talked about quite a lot. One of the best TV shows I've ever watched. It's about a guy who comes back from New York to kind of take over his brother's restaurant after his brother killed himself, and it's the most accurate depiction of restaurant work I have ever seen in my life.
So that's why you like it.
Well, it's all, I mean, everyone's loving it, and it's because it's tense.
What is it on?
It's FX? On Hulu. You can watch that on Hulu, actually.
Okay.
I mean, just insanely good. But yeah, I don't know. Just if you need a TV show that's not about 40-year-olds reconnecting disastrously.
Well, it's a comedy, but it has Keegan-Michael Peele is in it. Fred Savage is in it. Eckner's in it. It's a good cast. Colby Smulders is in it. It's like a really good cast. The plot's fucking goofy because it relies on people making the most awful decisions, but sure. The cast is so good. It like rises above the material.
Right.
You know, so it is what it is. It is what it is. Just like this podcast, it is what it is.
It is.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Ian.
Yeah.
Modern video games is a thing. It's a huge, huge business. makes more than movies, makes more than porn, makes more than anything else in the world.
More than porn?
Absolutely. Video games, absolutely. No one's spending $800 a year.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are spending $800 a year on probably adult stuff, but. So anyway, so a couple of pieces of news have come out the past week that have sort of like rocked sort of what we think about the industry. The first one.
Yeah. So Sony is raising the price on the PS5. And this comes, their reasoning for it is inflation. It's affecting almost all territories, the price hike, except for the U.S. right now. The price in Canada, Mexico, Europe, UK, Australia, Japan, and China are all getting a bump. Ryan said in a post on Sony's PlayStation blog that high global inflation rates and adverse currency trends are impacting consumer and creating pressure on many industries. Ryan blamed challenging economic conditions in announcing the decision. The PS5 with Ultra HD Blu-ray disc drive is going to jump up to 549 euros. I believe that's what that is.
I'll do the Pat myth on that.
It's a 50 euro bump from the launch. And then the digital edition is getting another 50 euro bump to $449.99.
So we're talking roughly $50 increases.
Yeah. Well, UK is getting a £30 increase on both. Japan is getting a 60,000 yen increase and a 50,000 yen increase on the digital. China, I don't even know what to say. It doesn't give an initial rate. Australia's going up 50. Mexico's going up about 50.
These are about 10%-ish increases.
Yeah.
Roughly.
It's interesting to see, you know, I can't remember the last time this happened. Someone, you know, brought up an interesting point that Nintendo kind of does this, but they reiterate and re-release their consoles. That's how Nintendo keeps their price point high. They constantly bring out a new version to come in and replace the old version.
They don't increase the price of their old Game Boy. They'll release a Game Boy, Play It Loud instead, and that'll be less, or they'll do the color. Even the Play It Loud, I think, was not more. It was probably just the same with what the original one was. And it was just a different color version. I don't think it was more money to Play It Loud because it was the same tech. It was just color shell.
Right, yeah, it's just a color shell.
Yeah.
Interesting new note, though, that I just kind of came across right before we started this podcast.
Oh.
This is from the Twitter account Nebelian that always has some good game info. Sony is rolling out a new model of the current PlayStation 5 system that's a bit lighter. So it's not a remake. It's not a slim version. The version, the original play, same shape, same form factor, but clearly they are cheapening the production as they raise the price. The digital only is going to be 200 grams lighter.
What's that in pounds? Let me look that up.
It is half a pound, roughly. Almost half a pound.
It's 0.44.
And the disc version is going to be 300 grams lighter.
And that would be then, by pat math, about two-thirds of a pound. Yep, two-thirds of a pound on the dot. Just about 66.
So what the fuck are they taking out of there? That, I mean, what are they making cheaper? What are they taking out of there that's making the system lighter? I don't know. I feel like it's...
Any board they re-engineered with less chips? You're saying they're not doing that. Maybe they are.
Yeah,
that's,
I don't know.
Because that's one of the things they do.
It's not known yet which parts have been changed.
That's what they do. They combine chips and,
yeah,
you know, the problem. Here's the problem. Obviously, releasing during the pandemic was bad for everyone, just because a lot of times, you know, the cost comes down in production by the volume. Well, you can't do that if you're competing for assembly lines and things like that. It's just, yep, you can't. And then, like, if the car companies are all the ones and other companies start hoarding the chips, is what basically what happened. Everyone just started buying as much as they could, which caused this fucking problem. The same way when you, everyone's asshole bought all the toilet paper they didn't need. You know, that's what happens.
Right.
You never catch up. Well, toilet paper, I guess, kind of, it's easier.
God, it was so much fun laying into those fucking creeps.
Fucking idiots. Anyway, so the point is that we still haven't caught up. Meanwhile, they're not making and selling, they can't sell them fast enough in order to make a dent in the volume in order for the price to come down per. So they're left with this. And I guess like we said, we can't remember this. This would probably would not have happened if it wasn't for the combination, potentially, the pandemic and the inflation. Like we said before during the intro, we're saved because the dollar is now more stronger than I can remember it being in forever.
I was just thinking, we talked about that. In Japan, it's incredibly strong right now, too.
Yes. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
And if you want to ask, hey, Pat, how can that be? Well, it's sort of like, it's not a bug, it's a feature. Yeah. There's more printed U.S. currency than anything else on the planet by like a big magnitude. So going off another tangent, you can say, well, what if the dollar ever fails? It technically would be kind of impossible just because that's what everyone uses. And it is what it is. Go America, I guess. So like that's one of the things that's put into this. So I see people are upset about this here and there, but I don't know. It's like if you're going to spend $500, will you spend $550? Once you're at that point, it's still a lot of money.
You will, and you'll do it begrudgingly, but you will if you really want it.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, Sony's historically never really made money on their consoles to begin with. I guess they realize we just can't keep losing this amount.
Right.
I'm not trying to...
The market is there. People want them, but you can't produce them fast enough to sell enough of them to make the money you need without raising this price.
I guess. It stinks for the consumer. What are you going to say? I mean, for now, I'll take them at face value that they're getting killed on these. You know, meanwhile, I guess the Xbox is doing all right, and they could move the Xboxes, I guess, and not have to worry about this.
This has honestly been the least interested I've ever been in a video game console generation. And, you know, moving on to the next topic, you know, kind of that we wanted to talk about, bringing the two together. Phil Spencer says, you know, in an interview that basically less exclusives as time goes on, which isn't really news, but it's interesting to kind of hear, you know, a company head, especially because Microsoft largely... there's a lot of reasons Microsoft fell apart with the Xbox One, but one was there was just no damn exclusives that fucking mattered on that system.
Sure.
You know, the combination of the high price, the price hike, which wouldn't affect us anyway, but the high price of these systems, the inability to get one, and the fact that there's less exclusives to, you know, make you pick a side, just means I've just sat here and I've just watched to see if I'm ever going to grab one. And it's a huge reason. And I never thought I would get back to being a PC gamer. I never did. But it's a huge reason why I've become a PC gamer. Almost solely a PC gamer at this point. I play my Switch, you know, and I play my old stuff, of course. But in terms of modern stuff, I honestly don't know that I'm going to end up with one of these consoles. It's just made this modern console generation has just seemed very, very unattractive.
So this was an interview with Bloomberg that was reposted by Video Games Chronicle. That's the link I'm looking at. Xbox boss expects there to be less and less platform exclusive games in the future. Thinks products being multi-platform is better for the industry. Well, he would also say that because, like, at this point, he realizes the money is in, we said this forever, the money's always in the software. The money's not in hardware. It's in the consoles, at least. It's in the software
right.
sales. That's where the margin is. And when they transition over to this, and obviously Game Pass and subscriptions, that's the money to them. That's the money.
Right.
It was like they don't care how you play their games. Just play their games. Play it on your fucking smart TV. Play it on your console. Play it on your Ian's gaming laptop. Just play. Just spend money on their games. Go to their fucking Windows store and buy stuff. Like, they don't care. Yeah. Once they started doing that, once they had the Windows version in with the Xbox version at the same time, I said that's game over. They don't care anymore.
Sure.
Remember they started doing that? Was that 3-4 years ago? They started doing that four years ago. They started doing that where it's like, oh, you buy the Halo version, you get the Windows version at the same time with it. The Xbox version. When did they start doing that? I don't remember. But they started doing that.
Do they still do it?
I don't know. I think at this point, whenever they started doing that, that's when they basically waved the flag and said, we don't care about our hardware as much. That was before the pandemic they did that. I remember we talked about that.
Yeah, we did. I haven't really heard much of that since. So I'm wondering if it's something that they keep doing.
But they just threw it in. It's for free, basically. Sure. They just threw it in to sort of like almost like prime the pump of, hey, you can play these games on the computer as well that we own the operating system for, by the way. Wink, wink. You know, they started doing that. Someone's going to correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember we talked about that in the past. Yeah. How to install Halo Custom Edition on Windows 10. This is a video from 2018. So at least back in 2018, they did that.
Okay.
Windows 10, Halo Combat Evolved, 2015. Was it that early? Anyway, the point is this, is that they don't care anymore. They don't care.
They don't.
They stopped. They stopped caring. So I think it was 15. It was probably 17 or 18. So when he says these things, Sony is going to be the most scared one, because Sony doesn't have the buying power of Microsoft to go out and buy all these other studios like they can't buy Activision Blizzard, Sony.
Right.
But Microsoft can. So that's basically how, if you want to say, the war is going to end. It's not going to be for console sales. It's going to be that, well, what are you playing? What games are you playing? That's what it's going to come down to. Are you playing the Spider-Man exclusive on your PS5, or are you playing fucking Halo any way possible on 25 different
sure.
devices.
Right.
That's what it's going to be. That's all. They can sell only 20% of the what PS6 sells in the future. They may not care at that point. They may not care as much as you would think. That's basically what this says, at least to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Cites an example which two kids in the same house have different consoles, but they aren't able to play the same games together. It's probably less and less of a common thing too. Or one sibling would have an Xbox and one a PlayStation, I guess. But I guess
can you imagine the fucking fights?
Oh God! Oh God! They can't do cross-platform. Well, now you can on a lot of stuff. That's the good news. He said maybe you happen in your household to buy an Xbox and I buy a PlayStation and our kids want to play together and they can't because we bought this wrong piece of plastic to plug into our television. His response appears in part and fueled in part by Sony voicing its concerns about the Activision acquisition. We really didn't talk about that at the time. But yeah, they said the buyout could influence console buying decisions. Sony believes Activision's buyout could influence console buying decisions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You think if you can't get the Activision Blizzard stuff on a Sony console, why would you spend $550 on a PlayStation if you know those games won't be available? No, that's. Yeah, Sony's not going to be in a good state, I think, in the industry.
No, it's looking like they're setting themselves up for a drubbing, honestly.
They're going to buy their medium, some larger size companies, but they can only spend so much money on this and gobble up so many things, Sony, in order to give people reason to buy, a Sony console in the future. It's going to be less and less. I'm not saying it's the beginning of the end, but I don't know. If you go down this path, what's Sony going to be left with 5-10 years from now?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're going to be left with much.
Yeah. Next 3 years, you still have the Call of Duty games that must launch on a PlayStation console. I will almost guarantee you that after that, that will not be a thing. That's going to run out, I think, after a few years. They're going to get the sales, and after that, be like, well, we're going to start transitioning people over. And then Sony will have, unless they play ball. I can picture Microsoft still putting stuff on the PlayStation consoles and just taking a huge fucking cut.
Yeah.
Of it.
No, I think that's what will end up happening.
So yeah, well, you'll make a little bit of money PlayStation, but we're going to make way more money than they're going to have all the cards. They're going to hold all the cards, Microsoft. Yeah. And then there's the rumor that PlayStation has been paying devs to keep titles away from Game Pass.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit last week, I think.
What do you think? Anything else you think about Phil's comments on this? It's
no, I think this is kind of where everyone has really truly seen this going. I think it's just accelerating at this point.
Yeah, like the acquisitions by Microsoft with Blizzard. That once you saw that, it's like, okay, they're really putting the screws to them at that point. Meanwhile, Nintendo will make their little goofy consoles off of the side with their first-party games.
Nintendo could release a system that only had, well, I mean, the 64 was kind of that only had first-party games,
sell.
And people would still buy it.
It would sell.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really play third-party stuff on my Switch. It's usually, like, first-party or stuff that's exclusive, you know, that's not first-party. Sure. But
yeah, you also get the people. I want to reiterate every 6 months ago how fucking stupid the people are and were that said Nintendo should go third party, that they'd be smart to put Mario on the PS4 because it would make them money. And these are people that were like influencers that like have a lot of followers that claim to be intelligent.
They all thought that's exactly where it was going, and it's
like
just
that
like,
would save Nintendo. Oh my god, like you shouldn't have an audience at all. Like, why are people trusting that you have intelligence? I'll just say that. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Don't fucking talk about politics as well. If you're stupid about that shit, I don't want to hear your opinion about politics. Sorry. Sorry. Just had to get that off my chest.
It's fine. Let's move on.
We got a Patreon, don't we?
Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you look at the menu. And you make a decision, you give us some money. We appreciate that money. And in return, you get the full video podcast. You get bonus bits every that come out once a week. You
writings.
Get writings, you get the hangouts, and you get these poll topics.
And we have a pin club. And Pat filled in talking about Knight Rider on Saturday.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
And second place, this is a two-thirds vote, super majority, just about. Games You Cannot Believe Are on the NES. Oh, that's the wrong one. That one, I never did it before in my life. That threw me off. All right, second place, is grading or reselling worse for video game collecting? 35%. And then in first place, 65%. Games You Cannot Believe Are on the NES. Clickbait, and we're like, huh? Holding the carts up, which we will hold up. I'll give you the cards, but we can hold them up. That'd be funny. Here's a few. I'll give you a few. And we can hold them up. I'll give you Taboo the Sixth Sense. You can hold two in each hand. And I'll be like, there's our clickbait title. And we're like, what are we doing with these games? Clickbait! Hey. What? Okay, that's good.
Okay.
So... What are games you cannot believe are on the NES?
This is such a silly topic. Honestly.
And I have the assistance of a certain NES guidebook, which I haven't brought up in a while.
So one of the first ones that popped to my head is Trade West here bringing out Taboo the Sixth Sense, which is not really a game.
It's a piece of software.
It's a piece of software that kind of sort of does a tarot card reading.
Yes, that's what it's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and it also gives you, says it right here, right on the front, your personalized lucky numbers revealed.
Developed by Rare, by the way. It's a Rare title. Trade West is just a publisher.
Yeah.
Genre, other, comma, simulation. I had no idea. Did I review? I reviewed that one. I had no idea how to put it that in a genre. It's definitely a simulation of doing a tarot card reading. But where's the card? Is it the first one?
That's right here.
Well, that's a rental, the Predator. But yeah, it's a weird game. You run through it in like literally a few minutes. You put in your name, you put in your birth date. You do that stuff. I think you put in your sex, and then you get, according to this, the game shuffles a tarot card deck with dizzying graphical effects and chooses a card that signifies the user and 10 cards to represent the answer to the question in 10 positions. You ask a question. That's right.
Yeah.
You answer a question and you get a readout, and some of the cards are really grisly because they're tarot cards, and there's nudity. There's 8-bit titties on some of the cards, on a couple of the cards, just like a real tarot card.
Yeah, it's one of the only games. I think it's the only game to carry. It has two warnings on it, I believe.
I say this non-game may be entertaining for fans of the metaphysical and tarot, but anyone else may see it as a strange curiosity in the NES library. Adjust the rating based upon your personal enjoyment of occult-based entertainment. I gave it 2.5 stars. I don't know how you rate it because it's not a game. It's not a game.
It's neat.
It's a simulator for tarot card reading. Yeah. I mean, and then on the back of the box, it says, for my writing here, Taboo the Sixth Sense is not intended for children under 14.
Under 14.
So it's like one of the only games that specifically says this is not for kids.
Yeah, and it also says that it makes sure to note that it's intended for entertainment purposes only.
Yes.
I remember seeing
curiosity,
it.
Curiosity, value, entertainment only. No mystical or magical charms are guaranteed or inferred. It literally says that on the box. What a bizarre... You can't call it game. It's a piece of software.
Yeah.
It's like a weird thing you probably would see on a computer back in the late 80s.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Just like a little Absolutely. Piece of software that they threw together. Your personalized lucky numbers revealed. It's for adults. It's an adult weird-ass game.
Yeah.
It's fucking weird. What's next, Ian?
Predator.
Predator.
Now, a Predator game in the modern day and age...
I think I reviewed that one as well.
Makes sense. You know, video games have grown up and evolved, and the first generations of people to play them have grown and evolved too. And video gaming is now a much more it covers everything. It's a more mature hobby. It still has lots of kids stuff, but video gaming as a hobby has aged up. However, on the original NES. And with the original NES, video games were still mostly the domain of kids. A lot of kids were playing video games. We're talking kids under 12. And to have a Predator game, it sticks out of the library quite a bit.
It came out in 89, so that's 2 years after the movie came out. The movie came out in 87. We were also at a time when, like, Platoon was getting a license. A lot of R-rated stuff, like Hudson Hawk was getting games.
Yep.
Like, they still didn't know, I guess, what the exact audience was.
Yeah, they didn't know what the market demographic.
Yeah, kids are playing Nintendo, but also adults, so that they're doing stuff like that. I gave it 1.5 stars. Not the most abysmal game, but not good, obviously. There's two different play modes in Predator, if people aren't aware. And I said that to try to cobble them together. There's a more like Contra looking, and they basically stole assets from Contra, is what it looks like. Action platform, run. You almost don't want to call it a run and gun shooter, because a lot of times you're just exploring.
Or punching
or throwing a grenade at like fucking punching scorpions. And there are, and then there's the big mode where it's a totally different engine.
Yeah.
Where you're like, for an NES game, it's super impressive when you look at the graphics.
Yep.
Where you like avoid bubbles and then you have to shoot the predator. And that happens times throughout the game. That happens where you encounter the regular predator, but then you have these big modes where like the screen's condensed because, yeah, I can't explain. You gotta look at the gameplay online. And that's what's so bizarre about it. It's almost like they didn't know which game to do.
Yep.
That's how it comes across.
Exactly.
So both modes stink.
Yeah,
both are half-baked. I said they're half-baked.
Neither feels complete or fleshed out in any way.
I said there's some decent ideas, but it comes off very half-baked. It appears at times that these were two entirely unrelated games that the film license was slapped onto and cobbled together. That's what it feels like. And it's, again, extremely violent movie that, like, a kid would not ask for a Predator. I would, though, because my father rent videos and not care how a seven-year-old would be affected by seeing half Carl Weathers' arm blown off. But that's just me. It didn't really affect me too much, right?
Wally Bear and the No Gang.
Game
that I genuinely enjoy.
Did you review that one?
Probably. I probably did.
You did not review that
Oh,
one.
Yeah. I probably didn't because I couldn't have given it a fair review.
Oh,
I like Wally Bear.
I gave it 1.5 stars.
It's not a good game. It's not. It's very difficult. The programming is janky. Everything feels bad. But I like...
By the way, 1.5 means bad, but some merit.
To me, it's fun just trying
there's
to get...
Merit.
Like,
there's some merit to Wally Bear. There is some merit.
It's not fun as a video game, but it's fun as a challenge, I guess, to me, if that makes any sense.
You can get enjoyment out of it.
Yeah. I get enjoyment out of the
theme is goofy.
It's, yes.
The frisbee mechanics and seagulls, it's like I said, it's janky, but you can get some enjoyment. The anti-drug messages. So
is weird. It's
the
very...
The wallpapers in the house.
The wallpapers in the house could only be chosen by people who are on drugs.
I wrote almost as much in the reflections as the review, because I talked about the stuff in the manual and the 1-800-HI-WALLY line that happens.
Oh, I've never even seen the manual for Wally
Bear. The AMA endorsed the game. The American Medical Association, the AMA, endorsed this game. They got the endorsement of the AMA. It's like the association.
Yeah.
That's so funny to me.
That is. That's crazy. But yeah, I don't know. Wally Bear is a unique, weird little thing. And like I said, definitely not good, but
they offered
I enjoy it.
They offered a mail-in subscription to Wally Bear and the No Gang, which offered a poster, stickers, and a newsletter. I will put a bounty on because I've never seen the poster, the stickers, or the newsletter. I'll put a bounty on anyone that has the Wally Bear because I don't think there's pictures of them online. No. I don't think I've ever seen them. What's next, Ian?
Chiller.
Oh, my God, Chiller.
Fucking Chiller.
City arcade game that was infamous.
Just, again, much
another
like,
one I reviewed. I reviewed most of the book. Like, 1 star.
Like, Predator to the extreme in terms of why it's weird. This is not a game for children.
Shooting gallery game.
You are literally torturing people in the game.
Yes.
You're not the good guy in Chiller. And the moment I first played Chiller and realized that, I was like, oh, I'm just like, I'm the bad guy. Like,
I'm just torturing people. I'm just setting off devices.
Yeah, and shooting off their legs and
guillotines.
Guillotines and squashing their heads with vices. Like, just
have an alligator eat a head when you lower them into the
an absolute mess of a game. And on top of it, you know, how kind of like mean spirited and gruesome it is, it plays like shit.
Well, that's a whole other issue. So it's one of the only, there's two, the two non-licensed light gun games.
Baby Boomer's the
Baby
other
Boomer
one.
And Chiller. And I did reviews of both NES Punk videos and wonder why, because they're both goofy as hell. They offer two-player, either via controller and zapper combo or controllers or two zappers. The problem is the game only registers one hit at a time, one input from one of the two players. When me and Ease play on the marathon, we're like, why can't we shoot him? Because we both would literally probably had to take turns, one, two.
I was literally just thinking how it would have been. Like, you'd have to get a rhythm going. Like,
because that's how the zapper works. It does a whole refresh for each hit to see what you reflected off.
Absolutely.
That's basically how it works. And for some reason it worked the same way with the controllers. Like, you can hit the A buttons with you and it wouldn't work.
Yep.
Goofy,
yeah, because it's refreshing.
And it has the voice sample at the beginning of the game, it goes, it's insane. It's one of the only games we played in the first marathon. Didn't work because there was a bug when you the ROM was bad.
I thought we finally got it going. Didn't I grab one from Luna?
Did you run down and get one?
I think I had a copy. Yeah, I think I went and
you,
got
like, went
a copy.
Back and got one.
The only game we did not play on the first marathon was Stunt Kids.
Okay, so what happened with Chiller is we would literally hit the start button and then would freeze. Which means it was a bad ROM. It would boot up, it was literally a bad ROM because this is an unlicensed game from American Game Cartridge Inc. That's a 1 star. 1 star is bad. Like, 1 star is like you can play it, but you don't want to. Once you get below 1 star, which one of these games is definitely below 1 star, we'll talk about. All right, what's on my list? We'll go from the goofiest ones. Bubble Bath Babes, one of the three adult games, Panesian, those lovely ladies, which they were also the same ladies on the other two, mm-hmm. Peekaboo Poker and Hot Slots.
They could only pay for those models for one shot.
I guess so. Bubble Bath Babes, this is actually the best one because it's a puzzle game that's decent.
Yeah, it's the best.
I gave it an average rating. I gave it 2.5 stars.
What was it called? Mermaids of Atlantis is the original.
This was actually the original.
Oh, okay.
This one actually came out first. This was by Computer and Entertainment. So they technically did this version, and then Mermaids of Atlantis. Where's Mermaids? Mickey's Suicide Mermaids. Mermaids of Atlantis was also Computer Entertainment. They just switched around the graphics to get rid of a nude lady on the bottom. It's a puzzle game. It's a match three.
It's a weird puzzle game.
Match three or match four? Well, I got a review book in front of me. I can tell you what it is.
Pretty fun.
You just switch the colors.
You get bubbles and you can rotate them and then they float up instead of falling down. And as you connect,
it's a match four.
Yeah, that's
it's
what
a match four.
Yes.
So you don't change. You basically change where the colors are on it. Let's see. Oh, you flip the shape.
Yeah, you can flip the shape.
Okay, you flip the shape. Gotcha. Yeah. You flip the shape, which basically changes the color.
Did I do the review of that one?
I did Bubble Bath Babes and I did the other one because they're virtually the same game, so they get the same review.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said this is the non-nude version of Bubble Bath Babes. So these games are very rare. They're hard to find. They were supposedly only rentals in rental shops. I think there's no evidence they were ever actually sold in actual stores, and that's why you can't find them. They're in clamshell cases. You know, they had little paper manuals, and it's weird that the one guy is jerking off on the beating off on the cover on the left side there, looking at the lady. For some reason, they're drawn out men in togas and fig leaves, but the women are 1980s models, late 80s, early 90s models.
And the further you get in the game, you get little like stills in between the stills. Levels that okay, show so it has a woman that as well. Stripping. Yeah.
Okay. Next is Sunday Funday, the ride. This one was originally sealed.
Sealed.
And I opened it because who cares? Because it's a Wizentry game. So this was originally another game. This is a Wizentry game, which was also Color Dreams. Let me get to it here. This was I always forget if this one came out first or not. I believe this one came out second. This is a action platformer. You're on a skateboard because hey, it's the early 90s. You're going to be on there. This is a quote unquote spiritual Christian game. Why is it that? Because you're trying to get to Sunday school.
Yes.
And you have obstacles in your way. Like you get like, I think like random people, there's these large women in the game that come after you. And of course you're going to have seagulls in there as well.
It's interesting. It, much like Bubble Bath Babes and Mermaids of Atlantis. This was two separate games.
Menace Beach.
Menace
right.
Beach. Yeah, Menace Beach so, is the other one, and Menace Beach shows like your girlfriend. It never shows nudity, but it shows her in various states of undress and distress.
So, okay, Menace Beach came out in 90, so it was 5 years earlier. This was technically the last game release for the NES. That's right. This was the last game release. This came after Wario's Woods, and so they repackaged this one. And the only difference is, like you said, basically, is they got rid of the cutscenes. In Menace Beach, your girlfriend's captured, and she's, like, hung up on a fucking wall. And in between the cutscenes, she loses pieces of clothing, like they're getting pulled off a rod away.
Right.
It's kind of weird to have that in a kid's game.
Yeah.
So, obviously, they had to do away with that on this version. But what does this version, Ian, put in that Menace Beach doesn't have?
For all karaoke!
Yes. Excuse me. For Him.
For Him. Sorry.
A Christian group that won the Dove Award-winning group For Him. You get to sing Ride of Life, the karaoke version there. And there's also Fish Fall, which is a falling fish game that will teach your coordination, will help you test coordination while teaching you Bible verses to help you become fishers of men, like good old Jesus of Nazareth did. The group's on the back of the box, by the way.
Yeah.
So they must have been big in the mid-90s, sort of like Christian like community. Brea, California, Wizentry. So these were sold in Christian bookstores, these games. So that's why you never heard of them.
Churches. My friend's church that I got dragged to once when I slept over on Saturday night. I remember seeing that, like, after church, you know, you could go down to, like, the little community room. And there was, like, a little store shelf that had, like, like Bibles and stuff, okay. And they rented these out.
Oh, you remember that?
Yeah.
And then I think I was cheeky. Menace Beach got 1 star. I gave it an extra half star for the mini game and the karaoke.
Yep.
That's what Pat does. See, Pat knows what the value is. I gave it the generous half star for that. I think that's warranted for that. Hey, that's one of the all-time favorite NES marathon moments. We ended the first NES marathon by singing that. And that's out there as a moment. And then another weird one. We can go on forever. There's a ton. You want to do an honorable mention, Zine? You like your Tom Sawyer. Is that a little bit weird?
Yeah, Tom Sawyer. Yo Noid is another weird one. I mean,
because they reskinned it from another game.
You reskinned it from another game, and not only did you reskin it, you reskinned it with a fucking pizza mascot. Like,
and there's the pizza minigames in between that.
That suck.
It's hard to lose them, though. You kind of have to want to lose them. But
yeah, all you need to do is take a couple seconds to look at the numbers in the cards and be like, okay, I got to play it this way.
It's a weird game. My first time, I said, does this make any sense? What am I doing? I was eating the higher numbers.
Yeah.
Like, yes, that's what you do. And then I guess the weirdest game that we can acknowledge because it's 52 of them is Action 52.
Yep.
Made by college kids for no money, hired by a sleazy guy in Florida. This was like a get-rich-quick scheme that happened. Active Enterprises in Florida. This came out in 91. I gave it a half star, which is generous that I gave it a half star.
The true definition of quantity over quality.
This collection of 52 simple and poorly programmed games is more like a set of short demos masquerading as full game experiences. Most of the games are either shooters or platformers, running on one of like two or three engines usually, and they're all, abysmal.
There's a couple with good ideas in there. Streamers.
Good old cute little streamers that actually remade it almost like a Bionic Commando game, but it's a cute mouse in a party hat. It's fucking adorable.
Yeah.
Like the character, I'd want like a plush streamer's little mouse. And then I like the game where you're the bear throwing cookies. I like that one.
It's crazy to me that I don't even remember that, because I used to like, I had all those games in my head.
I bring up streamers in here. I bring up Fuzz Power. Fuzz Power is you're a troll with big feet, with big hair, and then it's literally their attempt at a Sonic clone.
Yeah, I recall that.
Which is funny because it came out later that year. Obviously, these games were all made, each game was made like in like 2 days out of these, or if that. I think they were all made in like half a day. And so you can, as a hairy troll, you can do a spin attack, which obviously doesn't work, and then there's blow dryers.
Yes.
That if they hit you, you get rid of your hair, and then you're a naked troll, which is kind of cute.
Yep.
Like I said, there's some clever ideas. These are like 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds. You know, the highlight is probably, if you want to say the highlight, the music is pretty good for what it is, because that's obviously separate.
Well, I love the intro. The intro starts off with It Takes Two by Rob Bass.
Yes, and they just rip it. They just rip the sample. Then it says, make your selection now. And then, of course, the last game was the Cheetah Men game.
Yep.
Game Masters, starring the Cheetah Men, whatever they say. And that's actually a really good song in the game. The game is obviously... like this is what they were, the whole tentpole of release, not on the cover, which is weird, but they obviously pushed it on the back, is the fact that there was a Ninja Turtles ripoff with three Cheetah Men characters, and they tried to do a sequel that was produced but never released and was found in the fucking factory laying there, carts and boxes that Mike Etler discovered and put them out. There's 1,000 of them.
My favorite thing about the Action 52 cartridge,
it's ridiculous,
is
the story.
The manual that it comes with, the comic.
Yes.
The comic. And on the back, there are hand-drawn pictures of action figures. And they're like, coming soon to a toy store near you. Never. And they even like draw in the joints and shit. It's insane.
Yeah, you can go on. There's a commercial on YouTube. So like they actually made a commercial to advertise this piece of shit, if you can believe that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Here's the comic book. Don't damage it, Pat. This is actually worth a lot of money. Here's the comic book, Ian.
Yeah, there it is.
Collect them all. You get Dr. Morbius and the three Cheetah Men. No, this will never be made. They try to push these probably at like electronic shows like CES.
Probably a bigger chance of them getting made now than there was then.
And then the same company tried to pretend they were going to do like an all-in-one game system that could play multiple consoles. And it was just like a guy throwing shit against the wall. I don't think they ever found the guy that tried to do this. I don't think they ever found him. Like, actually, I caught up with him. You know, probably living in some island somewhere. You know, just like an 80s villain with bikini babes from Bubble Bath Babes all around. So those are some of the weird ones. There's other weird ones. We're talking about 800 games on the library. There's a lot of weird games out there. You know, there's games on the system, even licensed. Like half of these were unlicensed. Half of these were licensed. But there's some weird ones out there that, looking at it, you're like, why did they think there was an audience for a game like that? Like, why do they think that kids or parents would want to buy that? I mean, Taboo is not the hardest game to find, so some people bought it.
Right.
You know, it's what is that? It's uncommon.
I'm going to guess it probably was like, they probably discounted it at some point to $19.99 at Toys R Us, and people picked it up on a lark.
So I have that as uncommon. It's probably uncommon. That's like,
I think it's uncommon.
Yeah, you can, it's not hard to find, but it's not.
Not impossible.
Not when I was going to have that. Meanwhile, in Action 52, that's, you know, this is rare. You're not going to find it. I have it as common. Maybe that was a borderline one. Maybe that was one that was like right on the border. Okay. All right. May readjust that for a fourth print run if I ever have that. Could like change them. I've tinkered with some of those a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
As I went through. That could have been a borderline one. All right. Well, thanks for the clickbait. We did the clickbait title thumbnail on that. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by True Classic. Finding the perfect fitting t-shirt can get frustrating. The thing is either too tight around your gut or too big and boxy usually. True Classic wants to make it look easy, to look good and feel good. So their high quality and pocket friendly menswear is made with every man in mind. It's the True classic way. So guys, no excuses. It's time to upgrade. In fact, over 2 million men already have. So we have an exclusive deal for a limited time. Get 25% off with their code CUPODCAST at trueclassic.com.
Almost all men's t-shirts are designed to look good on a certain body type. Think like a skinny model with a six-pack. But most of us aren't packing anything but a few beers. And there's nothing wrong with that. Fellas, it's simple. You are wearing the wrong clothes. True Classic's tees taper off towards the bottom, but they fit tight around the chest and shoulders. You can wear a True Classic tee with confidence. I struggle finding t-shirts that I like, and I do love to get plain t-shirts. I like to wear them as undershirts. I like to wear them under shirts like these. I'm wearing a True Classic tee right now, and it is buttery soft.
I actually wore this black one. I went to Frank's for the barbecue the other day, made some trout, and it's very comfy. This blend is fantastic. It feels great.
Yeah, and it's not overly hot. It's very breathable. Not only are you finally getting a t-shirt designed for the male body, but the first thing you'll notice is how soft it is. And True Classic doesn't just stop at tees. They are your one-stop shop for men's essentials. You can get polos and workout shirts with the same flattering fit to boxer briefs designed with a pouch to keep your bulge nice and comfortable.
All right.
All of their gear is top-notch quality at reasonable prices. And they have a great pack builder on their website where you can custom bundle all of their essential products and save even more than the discount we're offering for you today. And for any of the big boys out there, they have long body options for the tall guys in up to triple XL on their staple colors. Whether you have abs or flabs, their clothes look great on all body types. Skinny dudes, big dudes, buff dudes, True Classic has you covered.
Time to get comfortable and get going. Upgrade your wardrobe with True Classic. Get 25% off at trueclassic.com with our code CUPODCAST. Free shipping is included on purchases over $100. There's 100% risk-free guarantee with a 30-day return policy. Stay classy with True Classic. All right, put the guidebook away. We got voicemails.
We do.
You go to anchor.fm/the CU podcast. You leave us a voicemail. Keep it short and sweet, and I love it, and you're more likely to make it on the program if you do that. This first one is an interesting one.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Will out of Chattanooga. Just wanted to ask real quick if either of you ever did any wrestling e-feds back in the day, specifically the early aughts. I feel like Ian would be the most likely culprit to have done some e-feds. And if you have, were you guys any good at it? Just curious. Chat me up. Thanks, guys.
Chat you up, Will. Okay.
So I never did any e-feds in that sort of way where you basically you role play.
Sure.
Never did anything like that. However,
I promos and stuff.
Yeah. I did, however, get really into doing like a fake fed in Fire Pro. That I would, you know, run the matches and then kind of write up the results and post them.
That's pretty cool.
My fed was BDP, Bottle Deposit Pro. And you basically the championship belt was basically you would get if you won the championship, you would get all the empty beer bottles and you could turn them in and take the money. That was your reward.
Oh,
big players in
there was what
big players in Bottle Deposit Pro were Street Clothes Goldberg and Darkside Sid.
Was this G Fire Pro G
this
on PlayStation?
This was probably actually D. Yeah,
which came out before G.
No, after G.
After G, okay.
D was the first. D was the first one that upgraded to the bigger sprites.
The only one that did, I think, at that point, right? Did it go back to afterwards?
No.
Oh, it did.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the sprite style has pretty much stayed the same since.
They're slightly bigger sprites. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Street Clothes Goldberg one of the variants? Like,
yeah, it was one of the variants.
That's right. I remember. Yeah, he's in like black pants.
He's
on.
In like a black shirt and like gray pants or whatever. Yeah, so yeah, he was specifically Street Clothes Goldberg. He never wrestled in any normal clothes.
Street Clothes
and Darkside Sid was just a Sid Vicious edit that I made, but I put I layered on like I don't know, someone's like face paint or something.
Okay.
Like they were the big rivals.
They're the big rivals?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
So that was fun.
I never did one. Okay, the next one, I did not put on a comment, which means I either should have deleted it or we'll see.
Hey, guys. Jamie from Toledo here once again. I had a question for each of you, but I'm shelving it for the time being. I just rewatched Dark Side of the Ring, and one episode stood out to me. The episode about Herb Abrams and the UWF reminded me so much of Tommy and the Amico. both remarks were just going to become the biggest and best with pie-in-the-sky ideas. Both had to prove their haters wrong, and quite frankly, both were con men in the end. If you have seen the series, what is your favorite episode? Thanks, guys.
I have not seen it. It sounds like it's right up my alley.
No, it sounds like it's a great show, and I just I haven't done it.
I did, I think, a couple of seasons at least.
Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about the UWF. I don't ever remember it being on TV. I don't think it was in my obviously it was in the Northeast. Know nothing about the history of it. So that's when I probably want to check out UWF. Do you know anything about UWF or not?
No,
really?
I don't. But
it's not for like, what, 3-4 years? I don't think it was around for that long.
Yeah. That's the one that they found the prototype game for, right? Remember the prototype wrestling game that was found?
No, that was a WCW one before it became WCW.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Hi, Pat and Ian. It's Dave here from Edinburgh, Scotland. I wanted to get your guys' opinion on arcade bars. Here in Scotland, there aren't a lot of arcades left. They're mostly the redemption machines that Pat mentioned recently, claw games, you know, coin pushers. But there is a really growing trend of arcade bars and kind of nightclubs and stuff like that. That have some really cool machines that you wouldn't expect. So, yeah, just wanted to get your opinions on arcade bars and clubs. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I like them. I mean, it keeps arcades alive. I mean, if you didn't have them, you'd have so many more machines thrown out or not tended to. Classic machines. I mean, it's what revitalized arcades.
I like them. I do. And everything Pat says is true. My issue is that they've kind of become the de facto go-to. And I understand drinks sure. bring people in. But like, as a person who goes out and plays pinball 3-4 times a week, I am getting sick of every place I have to go to being a bar that smells like beer, that's loud with loud people. The loudness is not such a big deal. I just wish every time I went out to play pinball, it didn't have to be associated with alcohol.
Sure.
I would love a coffee shop arcade.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I think it's insane that, well, Frank was telling me back in like the 80s and early 90s, there was an arcade in our beach town here. We don't have a beach town arcade.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. People used to, Wonderland. That's a new place now that is down there. They reopened it, Wonderland used to be the arcade.
Yeah. It's just, I guess it's harder and harder to make money off of just straight up playing games versus redemption. Claw machines, point systems, like a
beer, alcohol,
drinks, yeah.
food.
No, no, I get it
too. I just, I wish it wasn't.
And there was
the
always,
case.
And there was always redemption games. Even in I talk about 80s and 90s. Not as many,
but they were always.
There was always ticket. There was always skee ball. There was always coin pushers.
Yep.
To get points. They always existed. There's always hell. They had. I love that they had like literally like the same quality slot machines at Atlantic City. My grandma used to have all her little coin. When you actually still have the coins and they would weigh them, the same with the tickets, and she would, you get the one arm bandits. They had that. That's how they made a lot of money out of redemption.
If a slot machine still dispensed coins and you still had to put a coin in and pull the handle, I would actually probably play slot machines a lot more. I have no interest in this tap your card, hit a button on a touchscreen, and watch shit.
I'm trying. When I went back to Seaside in June, I don't think they have any slot machine redemption games. And I'm talking like, mid to late 80s, that was the majority of redemptions. You'd have rows of slot machines
mm-hmm.
with the old people loved them because it was like, oh, you're gambling, but it's not money. But you're still giving away money.
Yeah.
And I wish I had them. My cousin might have them. There was cups for every arcade, had their own cups to hold them in.
Yeah.
They're awesome. And I feel like getting them all.
That's why I like Quarter World.
Coin Castle, Sonny and Ricky's has theirs. Lucky Leo's had theirs. Casino Pier had theirs. They all had their own stuff like that.
Quarter World up in Portland has their own little cups for keeping your coins in. And I have like 4 of them at home.
Don't make me go out and be a fucking Seaside arcade collector.
I was just going to start collecting cups.
I'll start doing that because my cousin probably has them at his shore house. His parents, they probably have them like lined up from there. Next one here.
Hello, Pat. Hello, Ian. This is Paul from Miami. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I have a question for both of you. I've never been to a retro gaming conference, and I was wondering if you have any advice on which one to attend for the first time.
Easy. I have two. You can do Long Island or you can do Portland, and you're going to have a great time at both.
Those are your picks?
Those are my picks. I do think Portland is maybe, in terms of if you want to see people, I think right now more people are probably going to Portland. It is the big one, I guess, in the
big
industry.
One. Yes, but it's heartbeat.
Long Island is a gorgeous, wonderful convention that I can't recommend enough.
Yes. But if you're talking about if you want to shop till you drop, like the number of vendors at Portland is insane.
Yeah, Portland.
You're talking over 100 retro gaming vendors easily. Like, if you, it's nuts.
Portland has great exhibits too. Video Game History Foundation usually does a great museum every year based on a certain topic. The NES one was magnificent. But I do think there's a lot of interesting the space and the exhibits at Long Island are just it's unlike anything you've ever really seen.
I guess what I'd say is whatever one's closer to you, like there's a couple in Florida I know that are smaller coming up in November. Just maybe start small. If you have the money to travel, do it, but have a budget. But yeah, try a regional one. Southeast Game Exchange, not too far from Florida, South Carolina. That's that was a pretty good one. There's a lot of good ones out there that you can check out. It's just whatever's in your region.
Hi, Pat. Hi, Ian. This is Max from Ossining, New York.
Hey, Max.
In the last episode, you talked about the Queen pinball machine, and Pat mentioned my favorite Queen deep cut song, Ogre Battle.
I did.
Pat, what is your favorite Queen deep cut? It can't be anything that would play on the radio or in the greatest hit CDs. Thanks, and keep up the great work.
Well, here's the issue. The Queen has like 4 greatest hit CDs. That's the problem. Like, once you get to the mid-70s when they really established their style, mid-70s to like early 80s, like a third of their songs are like on like one of the greatest hits albums, it seems like. Maybe like it's a fairly high percentage. I think Spread Your Wings is something that wasn't a big hit, but probably should have been. What was that? Was that late 70s? I don't know what album was on. I don't know what a lot of albums these songs are on. Queen had a lot of albums. They had like one album a year almost.
Oh, yeah.
They were prolific.
They very much were.
So Spread Your Wings, I think they had a music video, early music video where it just shows them playing a fucking song, like 70s music video. And that's like almost like a story anthem song, almost like Don't Stop Believing from Journey. It like tells a story,
yeah.
Queen didn't usually do songs like that. So that's an interesting one, Spread Your Wings. And if it came out on one of their greatest hits, forgive me, but I don't think it was on there. Next one.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Jedediah from Maine. I'm reaching out with an odd conversation I just had. I purchased an NES off of Craigslist way too cheap. This thing was missing half its screws. It was stripped. The seller said he didn't know anything about it. Not true. Obviously, the thing was dead and no fixing it. So I want my brother to have a new system, and I head on to my local game store. They say they don't source original NES hardware anymore. Instead, they lean into those like $40 Chinese knockoff ones. Not even like the Hyperkin consoles. They say it's because the NES is not reliable anymore, and they would rather just give their customers something better. That to me sounds more like a profit thing, or maybe easier to source the part. I don't think the NES is unreliable. What do you guys think?
The NES is not unreliable. It's a workhorse in terms of as long as the connector is clean. Like, it's a workhorse.
Fairly easy to service. But here's the deal. A lot of people don't want to clean their cartridges.
Sure.
Really, NES maintenance really does boil down to getting that cartridge connector on the inside real clean, making sure those pins are nice, mm-hmm. and then just cleaning your games when you play. That's really it.
You can pull the pins up a little bit.
So that's really all it is. However,
but if it's the board,
right? But it's usually not. The thing with this is at Luna. Yes, the NES is reliable. Yes, it's easily to service. You are selling to a mass market audience, a lot of whom who haven't played these games in a long time. They expect everything to just turn on with the push of a button like a PlayStation or something does. They don't want to fiddle with anything. You can tell them all day long that they need to clean their games, and a lot of them don't. And they'll come back the next day, and I'll be like, did you clean the game? And they're like, yeah, I cleaned it. And I'll grab it, and I'll grab a Q-tip, and I'll clean it. I'm like, this is filthy. Mm-hmm. Like, your game is filthy. You're ruining your system by doing that. So I understand their frustration. That said, we always carried NESs because as a retro video game store, you are clearly catering. You're going to cater to a lot of collectors, and a lot of collectors aren't going to want anything third party, no matter what. And that's fine. I don't shit on the Hyperkin stuff as much as other people do because for a lot of people, it's fine. It's not the highest quality stuff. It does, you know, some of it does fail. But, you know, they have good warranties on that stuff. And
it'll cost a huge amount.
Every place, any place worth its salt that you go to is going to give you, you know, a 90-day warranty on that. And, you know, you're covered. Is it perfect? No. But for a lot of people who want to just play some Mario 3, it's the easiest, most foolproof option, and it's going to be much less of a headache for a lot of people, including the sellers and the buyers.
For just a regular, let's see, a Retron 1 is like $25.
Yeah, they're cheap as fuck.
You can buy them all. Yeah, they're just AV, but if that's what you need to replace, like for most people, that's fine.
Yeah, like I said, not everyone needs to have the best picture and the most accurate portrayal of the game. They just want to go down memory lane.
Sure. How dare they?
Hi, Pat. This is Rebecca from Tarrytown, New York.
Tarrytown.
I love your videos so much. They really make me feel better when I'm feeling like anxious or sad or whatever. So to me, this is actually the completely necessary podcast. So my question to you is, since you're probably not listening to your own podcast or videos for fun, what do you do to silence the inner demons?
Inner demons? Inner demons. Wow. It sounds like I'm going to kill someone if I don't do something. Ian, what do you do?
For me, it's pretty easy, actually. I am a big fan of white noise machines. I have a nice one that I keep by my computer at work. It's small. It's easy to move into the bedroom when I want. When I need to silence my head and focus, I turn on white noise, brown noise, something like that. I've also found that and this is kind of weird. I've also found that using earplugs has been pretty good for me, too. I don't know what it is, but if I can't, there's something about that silence you get when you plug up your ears.
Yeah.
That it's different. It's not, you can sit in a silent room and then you can sit in a silent room and put earplugs in and it feels different. And that oftentimes helps get me back on track. I don't listen to podcasts. I can't. I've tried a ton. I've never listened to an episode of this one or Extra Napkins. I can't focus on a podcast. I just can't do it.
Yeah, I fall asleep a lot of times. Either Sounds of Waves. There's one on Amazon Prime that's great. It's like a low wave sound. It's so good. They just go to a beach and actually record. And you get a black screen.
Non-looping noises. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, I got one off Amazon. It's like 30 different sounds on it. It's non-looping. I don't know how long it goes before it loops or it comes back. It's got to be probably several hours, I guess, before you would know. But yeah. White noise, brown noise is good. Waves, you know, or just turning on Knight Rider and just having it, the wave of nostalgia. Speaking of waves, just wash over me. And I'd do like two or three more here.
Hey, guys. It's Daryl from Buffalo again.
Hey,
Pat, you talk about downgrading your collection as time goes on. After you get done doing that, what are you going to be keeping, and what are you going to be collecting for after you do that? All right, guys, have a good day. See you soon.
I'm going to be keeping most of the NES stuff. Not all. I'll have the whole library probably still, but like I have all these box consoles. I started selling them at SoCal. You probably couldn't believe I sold them. I sold a couple of NES box console variants there.
Did you?
Yeah, I sold an action
set. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. I was thinking Long Island. I'm like, no, you didn't. Yeah, SoCal.
Yeah, I sold the console set. The one didn't come with anything. I sold the orange gun action set because that one's easier to find than the gray one before the cutoff. TurboGrafx, I fucking adore the TurboGrafx, obviously. That stuff's not getting sold at all because it's also very small. That's the whole collection.
It's
right
easy
there.
Collection to hold on.
Except for the fucking gigantic. This thing is a monstrosity behind me, the CD unit.
Oh, yeah.
And I have the Turbo Duo in the box that I got from Nintendo Dan. Which I think what he said was capped. I got to follow up on that. So I'm keeping that stuff. Probably the Master System stuff. I have a weird fondness for the Master System. So
again, a small.
Small library. You can see right there. It's tiny. And then I'll probably keep. There's only three or four box variants. I'll keep the Master System too. It's small. I'll keep the regular Master System box, which I don't know where it is, but that's not it there. That's the 3D one. So I'll keep that stuff for sure. Then obviously I'm going to keep all the weird shit. I'm going to keep the M82. I'll keep the fucking Sega. I love that, the kiosk stuff. When I have room, I'll probably like actually set up the kiosks. I think that'll be a cool idea to actually have the Sega kiosk, the M8 2.
Absolutely.
They want to have one in Long Island. The test, some like the test station, I'm not in love with. Never was.
I love the test station. Love it, love it, love it.
See, stuff like that. I think
it's so cool.
I think it's cool, but I don't. I got that. I was forced to buy that to get the M82. I hate to say it.
I think I like the test station more than I like the M82. Just because it's neat. It's weird. What do I do? It's more interesting to me.
Okay. Anyway, so I'm gonna do that, and then what am I gonna get rid of? Anything that. If I have to, I'm going to do the whole like hoarders thing. If you have to think about it more than like 3 seconds, sort of sell it thing, I'm going to do that for
sure.
Like individual games, like in the libraries where like, oh, I don't know. Do I really need fucking look at Genesis game? Do I need fucking Quackshot? Yes or no? Do I need Populous? Yes or no? And if I don't have a F20, do I need F22? You know, like, and then that's going to sort of guide me.
You don't.
And I'm not even going to, I'll probably not care about even the availability or rarity that much. I'll just be like, well, even if I make a mistake, I can buy it back.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like of all the stuff at SoCal, I felt bad about one thing that I sold that was like, you know what? I really should have kept that. And I can always buy it again. And I haven't bought it yet. So, like, that's how I'm going to sort of guide.
Which one was it?
I don't want to say because everyone's going to buy it. I don't want to say it. Okay. Because it doesn't go for a lot of money, but it's a little hard to find, but it doesn't go for a lot of money. So, I'll tell you off here.
But, all right. Let's wrap it up. Let's get one more in here.
You want to do one more?
Let's get one more.
Hey, Pat and Ian, Tony from Massachusetts.
Tony.
I have a food-related question for the both of you. Sorry, Pat, I know, intermittent fasting. Pat, is there a favorite dish of yours that Frank prepares for your get-togethers during the holidays? I know you've mentioned you guys do the 7 fishes, and as a fellow Italian, I'd love to know. Yeah. And Ian, is there a dish that people request for you to make to bring to special occasions or to the holidays? Thanks, guys.
Vani will honestly, I think she just likes seeing what I come up with. I don't do a whole lot of repeat dishes, but the one thing that she probably requests of me, there's two that she requests of me very often. The tofu that I make, the way I braise my tofu, she loves it and she will request that by name. And she also loves the way, and I bring this up all the time, she loves the way I cook eggplant. She was like the big eggplant hater, and I turned her around like 100% with really good eggplant when we first started dating, and she's been a fiend for eggplant ever since.
Okay. Favorite dish that Frank, oh, God, I mean, there's so many good stuff that Frank makes a really good burger.
He makes a fucking great sauce.
Of course, the sauce. Come on, forget about it. The sauce is great.
His sauce with sweet Italian sausage was think about it.
His sister makes the really good eggplant dish around Christmas. I forget what it's called, where you put the chopped little carrots in it, and oh my god, where it's like mushed up the eggplant. It has like a red sauce on top.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Fucking starving now.
This was a good one to choose as the last question.
Frank makes really good sausage and peppers. I actually brought that up to him a couple weeks ago. I said, Frank, it's been like years since you made sausage and peppers. Because he goes, gets a nice Italian, he gets the Italian rolls from Mona Lisa.
Yeah, those rolls are so good.
Does that. And then Frank is a really good cook in general. Like he makes a good, just like, he'll make like a chicken and put like oranges in it, like orange seasoning, and it's delicious. Just like a chicken, put it in the oven. Just, and he likes, he make, he does the potatoes with rosemary on them, rosemary like seasoning, and you know, you put them, you crisp.
Oh yeah, rosemary oven potatoes, amazing. Great tip.
Fucking great.
Not parboil necessarily, but boil the potatoes a little bit first. Drain the water, let them sit in the steam, and they get a little mashy on the sides.
A little mashy.
And then you bake them in the oven, and they get so fucking crispy from that. I have no idea
how. Well, how do you slice them when they're mushy?
So you basically, you chop them up, you dice them.
Oh, you dice them first. Okay.
Yeah. You boil them for maybe 4 minutes.
Okay.
So that they're still pretty firm on the inside, but they start to cook a bit around the edge. You shake the pot a couple of times and it kind of mashes up the outside of the potatoes, and for some reason that results, when you bake them, it results in insanely crispy oven potatoes. So fucking good. So good.
See you, potato cast right here. Well, that's good. I'm starving.
Me too. I'm definitely going to go get that eggplant sandwich.
Jeez. Oh, we skipped a question. We can do it real quick. I skipped one on the list. We'll do like a 10-second one. Sorry, I skipped it here. What happened to it?
My stomach is grumbly.
I know. I went to the food one probably by instinct, and I shouldn't have done it. But one more.
Hey guys, greetings from Costa Rica. This is Francisco. I would like to know, what do you think about a port of Kid Icarus Uprising for Nintendo Switch? I mean, the original one was great, but I mean, the control was not good. Aiming with a touchscreen is a crime. I think the game had really good on-rail shooter sections and great on-foot battles. And I think that's the only thing it needed, a better controller. So I don't know. What do you think about this?
It's one of the best Nintendo games, and I absolutely... It's one of the best... I think it's one of the better Nintendo games in concept in a long time, and I hate playing it because the fucking weird shoehorned-in control scheme was absolutely miserable. I would have suffered through it, but as a lefty, it was even worse, and I couldn't fucking play it. I would really love to see that game get a Switch port. There is nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, holding that game back from being ported to another system. None of the control scheme was necessary. So yeah, that's how I feel about it. I think it's a real lost opportunity that they're not porting it.
Listen to Ian, get on the Nintendo. Somewhat simple port. Just change the controls on that one. Let's do it. All right, that's it for the podcast. We're starving. This is a fun one. We had fun with our clickbait.
Yeah, we did.
That'll time. Be funny. Should probably take a better picture than that, but that's fine.
It'll do.
It'll do, pig.
It'll do.
All right. We'll see you next week for some more shenanigans.
Bye. Take care.